Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler, and this week I have Daniel Barber, who is the VP of Sales at Data Nyze. Data Nyze is a company located in the Bay Area, correct, Daniel?
Yes, we're in San Mateo, California.
San Mateo. And Data Nyze produces services and products that are near and dear to all of us, since we are working with lists and trying to figure out who to contact, and also to figure out how these people resonate with, you know, with the things that we're looking for in terms of our product sales service. So we want to make sure we start with a really good, clean, live, active list. So welcome, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Mary Lou. I'm happy to join and cover a few topics today.
So tell us a little bit about Data Nyze first. And I know that they're a relatively new, are they not, company? Or tell us more about what the company is about and why they are in this marketplace helping us become better closers and better salespeople and working with prospects.
Absolutely. Yeah, so Data Nyze, we're going into our fourth year. So the company, we're really the leader in technographics. So what that means is we provide real-time insights and buying signals into a company's technology choices. And so, you know, if you think about every company today runs on some form of technology. And so we surface who's using yours. And so, you know, as companies selling technology, you know, really we've got to a point where every function, so whether it's HR, finance, you know, accounting, marketing, or sales, every different function is using a different technology. And so we crawl on a daily basis 40 million websites. Mm-hmm. And so courtesy of that, we have historical data as well as real-time data on what technologies they're using and what they change on a regular basis.
Oh, that's interesting. So I've asked you to join us today, and we're trying a different format. You're my guinea pig, so we'll see how this goes. But what I wanted to do, and I really started to get a sense of this as I heard from people on regarding the podcast, is that, you know, the guests on the podcast, you especially, have such a wide range of experience. And I wanted you to select something that you felt was important to discuss as we move into the new year, especially. So I've asked you to put together for the listener some of the biggest pressures that you're seeing, or maybe it's one that you'd like to talk about today. And we're going to follow that thread all the way through to what if they don't do this, or what if they do this, because you've had so much experience across the board. So the topic we're talking about today is 2017, which is we're in January 2017, if you're listening to this podcast. And the actual topic is 2017 planning. So why did you select that topic specifically, Daniel?
Yeah, so appreciate the context there leading into our topic. I don't know if I'll be able to live up to all of it, but I'll do my best shot. I think, you know, for listeners, I mean, I think all of us in some shape or form are in leadership, right? Whether you're an individual contributor and you're essentially running your own business and you're tuning in, or you're a sales leader and you're trying to lead a team effectively to, you know, a target, a goal, or you're in the marketing department and you're doing the same thing. You have some type of goal or some type of objective. But in reality, all of those objectives tie to revenue in some shape or form, right? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the common march toward revenue is, you know, something that the entire business usually rallies around in January. And I think you see that even all the way up to the CEO trying to determine what the associated revenue target should be. And, you know, a lot of that planning may have happened in November or December. But for some companies, it's happening in January. Or even for companies that were planning on it in November and December, they're ensuring that those targets are attainable and make sense as they go into January. And so, you know, I think it's something that we often see a lot of pressure, and a lot of that pressure comes from external pressures, right? So if you're an individual contributor, it perhaps comes from your sales manager or your VP of sales. It could come from the CEO. You might see pressure from the board. You see pressure from investors. You even see pressure from, you know, other employees in different functional areas that are not in sales, but know that you need to hit your number. And if you don't, then they actually may not be employed. So there's a lot of pressure that happens that goes into sort of 2000 and, you know, end the number there, planning. And so, yeah, I think it's a topic that a lot of us try to avoid because, you know, it's taking away time from doing the actions that actually result in revenue or closing business in the short term. But if you really don't do that long-term planning, you're going to see some failure down the road. So I thought, why not cover a topic that, you know, is probably near and dear to all of us, but one that we would oftentimes try to ignore.
Not only that, I think you hit the nail on the head. Is there's a process probably to planning that you're going to share with us, which is great. I can remember sitting in meetings back when I was in sales, and the CEO or a board member would get up and just stick a number out there of what we were trying to achieve. And you would look around the room and you'd see these faces of people saying, how was that number derived? You know, is it vaporware? Is it based on data? So what is the key? And I know you hold the key, Danielle. What's the key to planning so that we're not sitting in a boardroom at the beginning of the year being told a number that has no basis?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the overarching goal, right? I mean, if you were to sort of read anything from Jason Lemkin, you would see that, you know, the goal is to get to $100 million business in roughly 7 years. And I would say I've personally validated that. So I was fortunate enough to have four interns from Cambridge University in the UK work with me during my time at Node. And so during that time, we had three of them. So these are MBA interns, and so we had three of them work on a project where we selected roughly 30 companies that are now publicly traded, and essentially looked at their S1s, so their financial filing as they went to become public, and looked at the information that we could derive from that to determine what are the revenue numbers look like over a period of 7 years before they went to go on to become public. And, you know, really we validated that, yes, in fact, it is 7 years. And yes, in fact, you should reach roughly $100 million at the 7 year mark. So that is not just an arbitrary number. It's based on data. Mm-hmm. So therefore you can start to back into that number, right? And so, you know, you can start to look at what your number should look like in year one, year two, year three, year four, year five, and so on. And so, you know, some of that stems from, you know, first off, it's, you know, how fast can you get to $10 million, right? Or even before that, how fast can you get to $1 million? So there is somewhat of a lofty goal that does get put in front of an organization right from the start. But, you know, there's also a whole set of back-end planning that needs to happen, which, you know, I outlined a little bit today. So I've outlined a little bit that we're going to cover. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sort of excited to share some of that around how you can work backwards from that number and get to a place where, you know, you have confidence going into the number, and the respective people on the team that are all driving towards revenue also have confidence in that number.
Now, is there a ramp that you look for to get to the 100 million, or is it based on the products and services that you're offering at the 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, that on at those markers? Is there a ballpark range that you're trying to be at, or is that, are you able to do something like that?
Yeah, no, you definitely can. So, you know, I think in the earliest sort of first year to second year, you're trying to just get to a million, right? How fast can you get to that million? And that determines whether you've actually reached some form of product market fit. And I use that term loosely because really it should be used loosely. There's a lot of things that determine that. But you know, reaching $1 million sort of indicates that you have a customer base that you know, believes in your product, is willing to give you you know, probably a deal size between $10,000 to $20,000 up to $30,000 in bookings. So you know, you probably have your first sort of 30, 40, 50, maybe 100 customers. So you know, from that, Then the next target is $10 million, right? So how fast can you get to $10 million? And so most companies try to do that in their, you know, really like third year. So going to the business to cross $10 million in their third year would be a good target. Then that next race from 10 million is to 100 million, right? And there's a couple milestones in between there. So getting to 30 million, getting to 50 million, and the makeup of the sales organization and really the revenue organization will change as that happens. And so really that change will happen based on increasing the average contract value. And so if we really break down the way a revenue organization works, you have really a sales velocity model that runs everything, right? So you have a certain number of opportunities that come into the pipeline in some shape or form, whether those are inbound or outbound. Right. Then you have a deal size, so an average contract value. So that's a set dollar amount probably collected on an annualized basis if you're a SaaS company or selling something that's annualized. And then you have a win rate. So meaning you have a number of those deals that you win and then some of those that you don't. And then you have, you know, that numerator is over a denominator, which is time. And so, you know, if you look at that formula, what you'll find is the step function becomes the average contract value. From a standpoint of as you increase the contract value, that doesn't necessarily, you know, proportionally impact time. So what I mean by that is, you know, a $10,000 deal doesn't necessarily take half the time of a $20,000 deal. And a $100,000 deal doesn't necessarily take 10 times more time than a $10,000 deal. And so this may be, you know, basic for some of the listeners, but it's important to remember because it goes into how you plan your year around revenue. And it goes into how you allocate resources, whether those are, you know, field reps sitting in their homes, working from home, flying to different locations, doing deal sizes over $500,000, or all the way down to, you know, fairly transactional inside sales reps that are closing, you know, $4,000 to $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 deals.
Right. And we still see a lot of companies that I don't think have segmented the way that I just heard you say. So can you walk us through what this begin with the end in mind looks like in terms of what you need or what the guidelines are for this type of opportunity to get to 100 million in 7 years?
Yeah. So why don't we start in an area that, you know, at least I can share sort of my own experience. You know, getting to 10 million in revenue is obviously a hard task. Mm-hmm. I've seen that experience through my time at TaoDap. I've seen that experience through my time at Dardanize now. You know, we're on that path. You know, definitely saw the same sort of path at my time at Node. And then can share some highlights of my time at Responsys crossing over 200 million. So, you know, and working with other organizations that are everywhere in between. So I think it all starts with working backwards, right? So if we were to work on the $10 million target, so sort of that three-year milestone, trying to get to $10 million in revenue, you know, really on that third year of business, right? You're trying to get to $10 million. You need to work backwards from that number. And that really starts with, okay, so what is your average contract value look like today? So if it is, you know, $15,000, $30,000, $50,000, then what you've got to work out is, you know, how many deals are you going to need to get done in order to get to the revenue goal of 10 million? So mm-hmm. if you enter the year at 4 million in revenue and your goal is to get to 10 million in revenue, then to get to that 10 million, you've got a 6 million shortfall. Mm-hmm. And so that shortfall, you can either do that partly through new business, so bringing on new customers, or you can do that through upselling some of your existing customers. And so in the early stages, you want to bring on as many new businesses as you can because that gives you more potential to do upsell down the road. Mm-hmm. So, you know, bringing on those new businesses, you can look at the average contract value of those customers that you previously brought on over the last, you know, prior 2 years and start to work backwards. So using the sort of average contract value, so that second number in the numerator of that formula that I mentioned earlier, and break that down into one of four segments. So if the deal size is greater than $500,000, and you're in your, you know, third year, please give me a call. I'm very interested in joining your company. sales. So if you figure that out in your third year, I will absolutely join. If you're in the sort of 100K range, which again is still very, very, very successful. So if you've managed to crack 100K deal size, meaning, you know, deals larger than $100,000 in your third year, congratulations. But, you know, I think that's where, you know, the number of deals that you'll need to go from 4 million to, let's say, that 10 million number is much smaller, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's that upper mid-market range, which is probably between the sort of $50,000 to $100,000. So these deals are, you know, perhaps taking, you know, 2 to 3, maybe to 5 months. So you need a certain number of those. And then there's that bottom end of mid-market, which is sort of the 10K to 50K range. So deals that, you know, might be taking 1 month, might be taking 2 months. So from that delta, so the difference between 10 million and 4 million, you've got a difference there of 6 million. And so once you work out what the new business number is, you essentially can work out how many deals you need to close by just dividing that annualized number by your average contract value.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And do you proportionate in a certain way, or do you, and you're looking at heuristics or historical data in order to be able to proportionate, or are there guidelines for how, you mentioned four different areas, how you would break that up? Are there formulas that you recommend or guidelines for that, or is it more of looking at the historical data to see where you've been successful?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the guideline there, I would say, is like the goal is to move up market as fast as possible, right? Mm-hmm. I think if you were to look at any business, whether it's Zendesk, who started in, you know, doing self-serve $1,000, $2,000 deals, many businesses start there, but their goal is to grab enterprise logos. Mm-hmm. And that's largely because those businesses will pay them more money. And so, you know, really the faster you can add an additional segment of revenue. So to answer your question directly, you may need to segment, and maybe this year is the year that you do it, right? Maybe this mm-hmm. year is the year that you say, okay, we have this set of customers that are paying us, you know, $10,000 to $20,000, but we have a few customers that are paying us $50,000 or $100,000. You know, the quicker you can build momentum around a additional segment of revenue that's above the one you're in, the mm-hmm. faster you're going to hit that next milestone of whether that's 10 million or 50 million or 100 million.
Okay, interesting. So that's the opportunity area. What about the number of accounts? Can that translate into the number of accounts a rep should be working, or can it not? What's your answer there?
Yeah. Also sort of translatable, right? And so that next mm-hmm. step, once you've figured out, all right, I'm trying to get to $10 million. Let's say you need, you are closing 50K deals. Mm-hmm. So you're closing $50,000 deals. And, you know, you have a shortfall, like I described earlier, of $5 million. Then you need collectively 100 deals in the year at $50,000 to get to that $5 million.
Right.
Using that number, you can start to work out how many accounts you need. So there's the same type of criteria that applies to accounts, except this is where I would probably say my time leading sales development teams will come in. And so my experience there would say that, you know, a lot of people will look at an account, from the lens of the revenue side of things. What I would also advocate for is to look at the number of stakeholders that are required for a deal to get done. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to do planning and say, okay, I'm going to give my enterprise rep 300 accounts. But in reality, they'll likely, be kind of myotic in the way that they'll look at those accounts, purely because there's just too many people involved in every account, right? So
right.
If you think about a deal size, In today's kind of consensus-based buying environment, you know, if you're talking about a $500,000 deal, you've definitely got 10 plus stakeholders, meaning that 10 people are involved in that purchase, whether that's the, you know, CTO, the CIO, the VP of engineering, the VP of marketing, you know, the director of whatever. You're going to have 10 people that are either explicitly or implicitly involved in the sales cycle. Right. So therefore, you want to think about how many people can someone actually manage to communicate with on a daily or a weekly or a monthly basis. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I would advocate therefore is that, you know, as you look at the number of accounts per rep, you really should think about, you know, for field sales, it's probably in the vicinity of about 50 accounts. So that's for deal sizes greater than $500,000. Mm-hmm. For enterprise, so that north of $100,000 segment, it's really in between sort of 75 to 120 accounts. For that upper mid-market where you're seeing deal sizes between 50,000 and 100,000, you're probably talking about 120 to 150 accounts. And then for mid-market, where you're seeing deal sizes from 10,000 to 50,000, you're probably in the range of 150 to 200 accounts. And so those numbers, again, are not arbitrary. They're based on sort of working with, I would say at this point, around 300 sales development teams over the course of sort of my time over the last 5 years. And also testing it myself. I think, you know, as you go down all the way down to mid-market where you're doing deal sizes between 10 and 50,000, you're going to see around three stakeholders, right? So you might see a director involved, you might see a VP involved, and then you might see a manager who actually is operating in the platform or operating in the tool on a day-to-day basis. And you need all three of those people to buy in before you actually get a purchase.
Mm-hmm. So when you're planning this and going through the actual revenue pieces, and now we're figuring out, my head's spinning with the SDR role and business development. Do you have a sense of where that breaks up in terms of support and the sales roles? I mean, field I get, I understand that completely. But when we get into enterprise, upper mid-market and mid-market, how are those teams structured in order to achieve those goals? Just kind of loosely what you've seen or the way you've worked. Is there a separation of roles to help generate conversation?
Absolutely. Okay. I think the era of specialization is definitely here. I think you and I have seen that evolve over our time in sort of the industry. And I think, you know, you definitely have more experience there to talk to sort of how organizations are doing that today. But I would say, you know, broadly speaking, absolutely. I think, you know, there are a number of resources that listeners can go to. Obviously, you know, the Bridge Group does their annual study on the separation of roles and also the allocation of resources around how many sales development or business development reps do you apply to the respective sort of average contract value. So, you know, I would think about as the average contract value goes up, you really should try to move towards a one-to-one ratio. And so the closer you can get to that as you get to field sales, the better. And if you're in a growth stage, if you're trying to get to field sales and you're not doing, you know, $500,000 deals, you may even still want a one-to-one ratio because you're trying to grow. So that example I gave earlier of going from 4 to 10, you know, that might be a year that you say, okay, we apply additional SDR resources and we do a one-to-one ratio, meaning one account executive for every SDR, right. One SDR for every account executive, whatever way you want to look at that. And so that means that you're essentially, you know, funneling large amounts of pipeline to the account executive. And so, you know, the passing of the baton, so to speak, will be smooth and will ensure that you meet those revenue targets. That will obviously increase costs of the business. So as you know, the topic of this conversation being planning, you want to think about what the cost is to do that type of sort of heavy allocation of resources. But if you've got the venture capital or you have the facilities to do it, then, you know, go forth.
Yeah, go forth and conquer. I think the other thing too that this is screaming to me is not only are you planning for the revenue objectives, but you're planning your sales process, because these are very different, just the stakeholders alone. My mind is racing thinking, wow, it also means that in the qualification process and getting the deal ready as an opportunity for the AE, the account executive, there's going to be different sales process for each of those areas, depending on the number of stakeholders.
Correct. Correct. You know, I think as you see a larger and larger deal, the expectation is that you're going to involve more stakeholders. Therefore, you know, the sales rep is responsible for speaking to more individuals.
Yep.
And therefore, the, you know, the sales rep, the account executive, is going to need more and more support from the sales development team. And so I think what you see as you see larger organizations that run effectively is that the sales development individual is actually involved further and further into the sales cycle.
Right.
So, you know, that's a byproduct of, you know, leveraging that individual to continually add value beyond just scheduling of the first meeting. Mm-hmm. And again, a byproduct of, you know, when you have a large number of stakeholders, it's an efficient use of time to involve two individuals to try to speak with 10 versus one, right?
Right.
So definitely as the sales cycle and the deal size goes up, you're going to see the, you know, again, parentheses, but effective organizations will involve their sales development rep further along in the sales cycle, you know, as the deal size goes up.
Right. And it implies a certain level of sales skills to get further down the pipeline, which is what I'm seeing a lot, is that the sales development role is actually splitting based, you know, back when we did predictable revenue, we had an SDR. But now there are multiple SDR type roles depending on positionally where they need to get that opportunity in the pipeline. So that's another area that's really kind of fun, trying to figure, you know, out what we need in terms of the actual SDR skill set in order to be able to help move this along so that we can reduce the lag. Otherwise, the lag is going to go way up if we don't have someone who's proficient at starting conversations with multiple stakeholders.
Totally. I think, you know, we're, again, sort of fortunate enough at Responsys. We had two different segments within the business. So we had a enterprise segment that was really north of $500,000, you know, over an annual sales cycle. We had deal sizes that ranged, you know, anything from, yeah, that 500,000 sort of average all the way up to multi-million dollar deals. And then we had really what would I call, I would probably call an enterprise or upper mid-market segment, where deal sizes range between sort of $75,000 and $150,000. And so, you know, in that type of organization, not only was the sales sort of closing team segmented, as I described earlier, but the sales development team was as well. And so I think, you know, a lot of organizations are starting to separate and segment their sales development team. Mm-hmm. That's just a function of needing to have different specialization based on the sophistication of the sale. And to your point earlier, it also allows a beautiful progression and sort of promotion plan for folks that, you know, are perhaps entering their first or second role, you know, in a sales organization, and gives them the facility to grow in the org, you know, move on to something that's a little bit more sophisticated, and then, you know, perhaps move over to a closing role, you know, and smoothen out that transition as they do that.
Right. So it seems to me that though, Daniel, that all these things come up when you actually own the planning. So help us understand, if I'm listening on this call and like, okay, I get it. Daniel's right. I need to sit down and plan this thing out. What's a good action plan for someone who's listened to this call and wants to put it into action right away?
Totally. So I think the key part here, right, it all can be overwhelming. You know, we just covered a lot of numbers. Again, planning is something that it's kind of like that New Year's resolution, right? Yeah. Unless you actually plan to do it and actually execute on it, it's just that gym membership that just never really worked. So, you know, I would say that, you know, they're obviously operation departments, so sales operations, business operations, marketing operations that will help facilitate part of that. But if you're a leader, and by leader, I'm going to separate slightly here from individual contributors who are definitely leaders in their own right, but also, you know, sales leaders, marketing leaders that are trying to set goals for their respective teams. So for the latter listening, I would say, you know, it's time to own your own number. I think we need to leverage our friends in operations to make sure that, you know, you have the right level of rigor applied to that analysis that needs to be done. But fundamentally, you need to understand that analysis. And so I think, you know, long gone are the times that, you know, the number gets thrown out, no one really understands, and we all agree to it, and then we fail, right? directionally, the way I would say taking action out of this is, you know, work out what you feel like your third year or fourth year or fifth year revenue target should be, and then take it to your operational leader. And if you don't have one of those, then you know, start backwards. Start with the number that you have in mind, based on sort of looking at a 7-year plan, and work out what your average contract value is, and start to document it. Small steps around that sales velocity formula will go a long way. Mm-hmm. But really, you need to own the number. And so I think, you know, relying on the ops team to own all of it often can end up in a lot of trouble. And so I think owning that number and understanding some form of the analysis is very valuable and can be an action item coming out of this call.
And then, of course, we all know the typical outcome, which is that we just get numbers with no meaning behind them, no planning, no resources, and we start executing and we fail. So that's the typical bad outcome that I can think of. So tell us, you know, with a good outcome, what have you seen? I'm sure you've experienced this, since you're obviously well-versed in how to do this. So tell us, you know, end on a good note, a high note of someone who's really taken action, really owned that number, and worked towards generating that revenue number each year.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of it stems from what are the earliest indicators, right? So the earliest indicators can come from the sales development team. So you can start to see early success indicators, meaning pipeline generated. And so what I would do is start to look for those early indicators when you've set your planning and you're starting the motion. You know, when you see those early indicators of perhaps the pipeline number is a little higher than you anticipated, try to promote that, try to incentivize that. Use spiffs or anything you can to try to nurture that early success, because that will usually play out into later stages of deal cycles and therefore into planning, right? So once you start to see success against that early goal, whether it's January or February or March, or even if it's the end of the year, working out how you can continue to drive that and therefore expand your stretch goal. You know, speaking from my own experience, we had our target for December. And I had two stretch goals that I'd articulated to the team. And so we hit our first stretch goal at about the midway point, sort of last week before the end of December. And, you know, I really thought there was a possibility for our second stretch goal. And so I made it clear to the team that, you know, we're close to our second stretch goal. How do we get there, guys? Like, what do you need me to do? What calls do you need me to be on? How can I help? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's where making it clear it's a goal as a team. And, you know, that way you can expand your stretch goal. And, you know, as a result, you can hire more folks. So I think you're keeping transparency across the team of what the goals are, so that that way everyone knows what collectively we're shooting for.
Wow, this has been a great chat, Daniel. Thank you so much for your time. How do people get a hold of you if they want to discuss this or any other topics related to revenue planning?
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity, Mary Lou. I think, you know, I'm available on a few different channels. Obviously, email daniel@datanize.com. LinkedIn or, you know, the white pages of the internet. You'll find me there. And then also on Twitter, I have an unusual Twitter handle being Gaijin Dan. So that's G-A-I-J-I-N Dan. If you're curious, it's Japanese because I spent 2 years there. It means foreign person. So I'm generally a foreign person in all environments. So that's what I assign myself to.
And I'll be sure to put all those connections in our show notes so that folks can get a hold of you. Again, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure the listeners' heads are spinning as mine is of, wow, even a solo entrepreneur can take this advice and apply it to their different levers. They may not have the different levels of sales product, but we can definitely look at the different levers of income that we have and start allocating what we want to do where and then work towards that goal. It just seems so stressless when you do it that way.
Well, glad to be helpful.
Thanks again, Daniel.
Thanks, Marilyn.